Hello, Polytopians. Thanks for tuning into the Polytopian Times. I'm your host, Sam, and today we are back with a brand new fun episode. Finally got an update out, and it's a real good one, so very excited to talk about that. But I did want to apologize to everyone off the bat. My apologies for last recording session being missed. I happened to go out on a long vacation to the Porcupine Mountains in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Gorgeous area, no cell service whatsoever, basically, in that entire region. And I just did not get the recording out. So sorry about missing that, not giving anybody a heads up on it. I am going to do my best to be better in the future, but not here to spend the whole episode apologizing, so without further ado, let's head in and take a look at the naval rework. So, off the bat, I think we can first off update the name to the new name. So, the naval rework was the old working name for this update, but it's gotten a proper cool name. It's now called the Path of the Ocean, so that's something to really enjoy. Now, there's a whole bunch of changes here. There's tech tree changes, new units, new buildings, changes for the special tribes, of course, and even changes to whales, and we'll get all into that in a second. But I think, first off, let's talk about maybe the meatiest bit, maybe not, but certainly the bit I'm most excited for, which is the whole rework to naval warfare, the new units. So, without further ado, let's start with number one. Instead of our old boat-ship-battleship route, we've instead got a whole variety of options here. So we can start with the raft. And the raft doesn't really do a whole bunch. It replaces the boat. It's that free thing you get when you pop a unit into the water. It's great at transporting stuff. The difference is it no longer has an attack. The value is 2 movement, 2 defense, 0 attack. So better defense, actually. A good solid improvement there, but no ability to attack at all, and just can float and carry. It's really just a transport. It's free, and you can upgrade it to any of the other ships in friendly territory. Otherwise, it's just a free little ship that can transport units from one land to the other. And I do want to call out there, when in friendly territory, which is a bit of a change, you know. You won't be able to pop one of your rafts into one of these other units, a scout, a rammer, or a bomber, just anywhere. And speaking of these other more militarily inclined ships, let's move on to the scout. Now, the scout itself is a bit more like the traditional ship we've seen, but it is very much so a change still. Now, as the Midjuan team has said themselves, the battleship did basically everything. So they decided to chop it up, spread it around, and make naval warfare a little more interesting. The scouts got scout from them, so they get that enhanced view radius around them. They're very quick, they can see very far, but they're pretty weak in terms of defense. They've got the same attack as a ship. So functionally gonna serve much the same purpose, with the exception being they really can't tank damage the way the old ships did, but they're great explorers. They can find a whole bunch. They'll be a great range support and a cheap way to get that up. Now, this is the first upgrade. It's gonna cost you some stars, and it's 5 stars to upgrade to the scout, the same as it used to be for the ship. It does have the float and carry traits, as well as dash, which is important so you can attack after moving, and scout so you can see everything around you. Movement solid at 3, nothing crazy there. The attack is 2, defense is 1, and the range is 2. So the attack and the range are the same. Movement doesn't feel all that different. It does have scout, which is really great, but the defense did get nerfed down to 1. These guys will take quite a hit if they get hit, but they are probably going to be a great way to get some cheap ranged fire support up on your end, too. And more importantly, ranged fire support you can use the turn you move them. Now, looking on past the scout, we've got the other sort of tier 1 fighter in the waters, and that's the rammer unit. Now, the rammers are not ranged, they're melee ships. They're designed to go get in there and attack things and take some damage while they're doing it. Now, they are fast, but otherwise, as the Midjuan team has said, they're basically like Swordsman on the Water. So they're also going to cost 5 stars to upgrade to, so you can go either to the Scout or to the Rammer for 5 stars. These guys have Float and Carry as well as Dash, but they also have Sneak, which allows them to move around very, very, very sneakily, obviously, and very easily where they need to go. It's going to make these very versatile units that you're going to need to keep an eye out for, because they're going to be able to do quite a bit of damage. But of course, they're going to need that to get to where they need to go to attack the units they need to attack. Because, again, their range is only one. They're a melee unit. They have 3 movement, same as the Scout. They have 3 attack, though, and 3 defense. Meaning these are very beefy units for only 5 stars. These are going to be a great way to just absorb damage while you're trying to keep an enemy at bay, as well as get up in the front lines and do some damage. But, of course, your opponent's going to be putting Rammers out, too. So, we're going to see a lot of variety to the Wars at Sea. And it's going to be very similar to the Archers and Swords Warfare on land, or even maybe Archer Defender if you aren't getting your Rammers too close in range. Although I would think, given the range they have and all, it's going to be more like Archers and Swords, so a lot of shield walls and attacking Aegises there. But that's not all. We also have the Bomber, which is sort of the final upgrade we can get to as far as unit upgrades go. But it's not the final naval unit, but this is the final one you can routinely buy an upgrade to. The Bomber is basically a retooled battleship, as Midjuan put it, but not explicitly in the same way. It functions more like a mix of the old battleship and a catapult and a bit of a dragon. So, very interesting, right? Now, but let's go into the stats off the bat. It costs 15 stars, same as a battleship upgrade. It's got float and carry, but it also has splash damage on its attack. It has 3 movements, same as all the other naval units, 4 attack damage. That's a lot of attack damage, and 2 defense. So, honestly, not that great, but better than the Scout by far, and a range of 3. You'll note, however, it does not have dash, so just like a catapult, you've got to put your Bomber into position and then wait a turn before it gets to attack. With that lower defense value, there's still a good chance it can get taken out, especially if you're doing like a warrior Bomber that only has 10 health. It might get knocked out in between the turn where you set it up and the turn where you could attack. But again, splash damage on 4 attack is pretty insane. So they really did have to sort of nerf all that insane power by not giving them dash and not giving them scout. And, well, not giving them good defense. You know, even with the defense bonus, that's not going to go anywhere near as crazy as the old battleship defense went. Instead, Rammers will be able to pull up that level of defensive skill. But still, a 3 range unit with splash is absolutely, absolutely insanely powerful. But they do cost money, same as the old battleships did. You're going to have to spend 20 stars to get to it. So it's got its catches, its caveats there. You know, the dragons, I think, are challenged now, but they're still fundamentally better because, not just because they can fly and fight on land and at sea, but also because they have dash. They can move and attack still, get that splash damage in the same turn they move, which is a lot more versatile than the Bombers are going to be. But now they're not the only splash damage critters out there. And I know some folks are like, but Exedos do splash damage, but they don't do splash damage. They do splash poison, which is completely different and doesn't affect the health of the unit. These guys do actual splash damage the way that dragons do. But again, they're not the only naval unit we're getting. We have one more naval unit on the roster, and that is the Juggernaut. So, the Juggernaut is an interesting unit. I think it's a very smart way to answer the GBS, that's the giant battleship meta, that naval warfare was in for the longest time, literally years. So, these guys are free to get. They're created when you put a giant into a port. You don't have to pay money to get this better unit, which is really nice if you want to spam out some GBS equivalents, but it does come with some caveats that it absolutely needs. They didn't want to allow 40 health point Bombers to be a thing, and that makes sense, because a Bomber with that much health points could just tank through turns and mete out massive amounts of damage to the front line. So we get the Juggernaut instead. And I mean, they're still pretty good. They've got 2 movement instead of 3 movements. They're a little slow, but they do have 3 attack and 3 defense, much as the Rammers do, with 2 range. They can hit from a distance. They do have float, carry, and dash, so they can attack the turn they move as well. But here's the change up here, and I think this was an interesting and smart way to play with them having quite so much health points. They have a new ability called Stiff, and that stops them from doing any retaliation damage. So if you attack them, they will not counterattack. They're just going to have to soak up damage through their big health pools while dealing damage out at a range, which, hey, it works out and makes it a very interesting play. They fill a similar role to the Giants on land per Midgey statement. You know, they're designed to break stalemates, tank damage, deal pain to their enemies, but they can't defend themselves well. You'll need to make sure you have a fully functional navy with a variety of unit roles to keep them protected. And understand, at the end of the day, you can't make Giants your super naval units. You don't get GBSs anymore. A bomber will do more damage in terms of offensive power. But the Juggernaut's going to be able to soak up a whole bunch and be easier to produce as well, and still makes Giants a special unit at sea. It just makes them not the most important thing at sea, which I think is a good change. It allows for more variety and more different types of strategies to function instead of just spamming out as many Giants as possible to make the most OP Navy as you can possibly create. Now, that wraps up the new naval units. And they come from some new tech changes, and I mentioned this a little earlier, but there's been a rework specifically on the naval branch. So let's take a little bit of a closer look at that. Off the bat, fishing got a big update. So ports got moved from sailing into fishing. That's right. If you start with Keku, you start with the ability to lay down ports. And that's incredibly powerful. For every tribe, though, it means there's way less of a gap before you can get out to sea. Let's say you play on a continent, you get not the greatest continent, and you want to go out expanding more. Well, you'll be able to get out to that much faster. You can get right to it from fishing, and not just that, they don't cost 10 stars anymore. They only cost 7 stars, which is another good upgrade and allowing us to whip out more naval production much more quickly and earlier in the game. Now, this did come with a caveat. Ports are cheaper, they're easier to get to, so we did have to see population on them brought down to 1 pop per port instead of 2 pops, which is a bit of a hit, but it's not the end of the world, especially because, as we'll talk about later, they're no longer the only option to reliably generate population from the sea. And overall, they'll allow you to get into it that much faster, so that's really, really, really a good move, I think, overall. Next up, we have the sailing change. So, off the bat, it's no longer ships, but it unlocks the scout unit now, which is going to be nice. And, as normal, it's going to allow you to move around, but we do have a change there. Instead of it being navigation required to move onto ocean tiles, now you'll be able to move onto ocean tiles with sailing, so it means you'll be able to move around that much faster, too. Don't have to go as far down the tech tree. And this is all good for making naval gameplay that much more palatable for players. Beyond that, we have changes to navigation. The big change is no more battleship. Instead, you have access to the bomber through navigation, which is real nice. And they've also got the ability to harvest starfish. Now, this is a replacement to whales. You heard me correctly. Whales are not in the game with this new beta anymore. Instead, we have starfish, and you can harvest them by moving all your units onto the tile where they are, and you can actually harvest starfish anywhere. So if it's neutral territory, you can get it. You don't have to expand your borders to get a whale anymore. You can just sail out, grab the starfish wherever you see it. Hell, even if it's an enemy territory, you can sail out there and grab them. So it's going to be a race to get all the starfish as soon as you can. Stars are always a very nice thing. And, that's the change down towards navigation, but what about the branch towards aquatism? We do have a change there. No longer do we have whaling. Obviously, there's no whales. There wouldn't be a point to it. Instead, we have aquaculture, which is actually really, really cool and stunning. So, aquaculture allows you to basically pop down aqua farms. They put out 2 pops, same as any other farm. They cost 5 stars. It's just the same as any other farm. But, like that episode we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, this is a way to start farming out a lot of population in the sea, start making use out of these otherwise empty tiles that really don't do a whole bunch. Now, you don't get to use every single tile for that. You still have to get the luck to get the right resources and all that plays in. But I, in my opinion, in general, this makes oceanic tribes way more viable. Kiku just got a huge boost with aquaculture being a thing. Now you can go fishing towards aquaculture instead of having to worry to go towards land-oriented stuff. You can just pop right out into sea instead. That's really, really, really nice. That's about it. Well, the other thing for aquaculture is it does unlock the rammer unit. That's the sturdy melee ship we talked about earlier. So each of these different techs is going to unlock a different ship. You'll start with rafts with fishing, you're going to move down to scouts with sailing, and then you'll move down to bombers once you hit navigation. If you go the opposite way to aquaculture, you're going to get yourself the rammer unit, and then you can move on to aquatism and get a defense bonus for your entire navy. The whole naval branches feel a lot more functional, a lot more useful. But here's the kicker. We didn't just see changes to all of the naval branches. Here's the most shocking thing to me, honestly. Rhodes got an update. You know how everybody's been yelling and crying out for bridges for also years now, really since Polaris, hell, even beforehand? Well, bridges are now in the game. So bridges are going to be real nice. They'll let you go across tiles you need to go to. And that is unlocked with the Rhodes tech, same as always. Now let's look at the bridge a little bit more. They're pretty nifty. They are going to cost 10 stars, so they're the cost of the old ports. And they're only able to bridge the gap between a one-tile water gap between land masses. So you aren't going to be able to build bridge, then bridge, then bridge. You won't have a three-tile-long bridge. You can only ever have a one-tile-long bridge. That's going to be a bit expensive, but you can do it. And here's the real kicker. You can sail underneath them, and they can also be built in neutral territory. So you can bridge across a water gap you wouldn't have been able to cross previously without having made a navy and then sail around that landmass. Now you can just build a road out through neutral territory, pop down a bridge, and ride on across towards the conquest you want to get involved with. Again, I think this is a huge, massive change. Another thing a lot of people were super excited to see happen, and I'm super excited to see it be a reality. And that's not the only new building. We're also looking at a bit of a rework in terms of that excess income beyond just pop buildings. So it used to be customs houses, and I know I was talking about this in another episode too. It looks like we had some parallel thinking here. Because customs houses have been replaced by a building called a market. Also costs 5 stars. That gives you only 1 star per turn for every adjacent port, but also works on windmills, forges, and sawmills, which means it's incredibly versatile. Now you are not locked into laying down a whole bunch of 10-star ports to try and get a customs house up that gives you 2 stars for each port. It would have been 7 stars and only give you 1 star back. In this case, you can just have a bunch of lumber huts and then pop it down next to that and get the star for that, or have some farms and lumber huts and some mines if you want. A mix of everything and a port here. You can really get a lot more flexible with where you're going to put this down to get the most bang for your buck back out of it. And that means you can use it on a dry lands map and still have the effect that a customs house would have given in the ability to scale up your economy further. It's, I think, an incredibly strong change for revitalizing the economy of the game. A really, really smart move there. Now, obviously, we talked about tech changes, we've talked about the new naval units, and we've talked about the new buildings, but what about the special tribes that are a little different? We touched on Illyrian a little bit earlier. Well, off the bat, let's look at Aquarian instead of Illyrian, though. And Aquarian's got an interesting change to it. So, they did get a buff in terms of starting with a tech. Now they start with riding and an amphibian, which is really massive for Aquarian. They started with nothing and a warrior beforehand. So that gives them a huge boost forward. They can get out to sailing immediately. Also, crabs now move 2 tiles in the water instead of 1 tile. And they got an extra 5 defense. Or sorry, they're up to 5 defense, not an extra 5 defense, which is a huge boost as well. Makes them much harder to kill. And they get to move faster across the sea, meaning that this amphibious trait they have actually makes sense and has a viable purpose in game. That's 2 solid buffs for Aquarian there. Real big ones. Now, they do come with some pretty mighty nerfs too, but let's keep in mind this is not the Aquarian rework. All of these changes are just temporary patches to make the special tribes a little more viable in the new setup. But they are going to get bigger reworks, and I think Aquarian's probably earlier on in the list there. But they did get some nerfs with this temporary rework, and nobody's going to be happy to hear this. So first off, both Amphibians and Tridentians can no longer use roads on land. So what used to make them incredibly swift and powerful is now gone, and that's a huge nerf to the viability of Aquarian, because a huge portion of their strength was tied to Amphibians and Tridentians using roads. Now, that was a bug, but it was a bug so long it became a feature in basically everyone's strategy, and they're going to have to relearn the tribe now and deal with the fact that their tribes got that a bit of a handicap there. Pretty solid one. And then Tridentians got hit with one other nerf. Instead of the 15 health points they've had up till now, they're down to 10 health points. So they can get killed a lot easier. You can now one-shot them. If you've got a strong enough unit, at least. So you're going to need to keep that in mind. You now have functionally much weaker Tridentians and a functionally far weaker late game for Aquarian. But their early game got better, and hey, crabs don't completely suck now, so that's some positives. Overall, I'd say it balanced out. Aquarian really hasn't changed too much. It has, but in terms of its viability, not too much. Illyrian did get a bit of a hit on this. So there's no whales anymore, so there are no longer Navalons in the game. That's it's been removed. Illyrian can still totally harvest the starfish, but no more special whale units. I know that one wasn't everybody's favorite unit. Some folks really loved them, but they were incredibly situational, not the most useful thing. And, well, as Midgey so lovingly put it, they've gone the way of the dodo and are no more. And that's all of Illyrian's changes. And we have Polaris next. Polaris actually got some decent changes here. First off, some changes in the order of how they get things, and then two huge changes for their special units, and I think most Polaris players are going to really love this. Overall, I'd say this is a pretty big boon for Polaris. So, they wanted to get Polaris out and moving on the water a little faster, so off the bat, they gave the Mooney auto freeze the way that the Gami did. So every time the Mooney moves, you're going to freeze the water and the land and all the enemy units around it, exactly like a Gami. But this does come at a bit of a change to their stats. And so their defense is down to 1 now instead of the 2 they had before. But also, they can no longer manually choose to freeze. If you have to move to freeze something now. You can't stand in place and continually freeze a city that way, the way the Moonies would have previously. But I think auto freeze is overall a win for them. This does come at a bit of a cost, though, to balance this out, and that's a pretty big change. The other tribes have been given break ice as part of a dash action, so you no longer have to move a unit up to the edge of the ice and then park yourself there for a turn and hope you don't get killed. You can break the ice that much quicker, but you can also create more ice that much quicker. So as Midgey said, it should be a more dynamic push and pull between Polaris and non-Polaris players. And above and beyond that, we've seen some other minor changes there. So the Gami, they also no longer can manually freeze, and they can only auto-freeze. Manually freezing as an ability now is reserved explicitly for the Ice Archer. But not the worst thing in the world. At the end of the day, most people use the auto-freeze anyways. It's always generally important to move your units on the turn you get a chance to, rather than to sit still and potentially soak up ranged damage. Now, we did see a change to where fishing used to be that's been replaced by the Frostwork Tech. And that allows you to create Moonies early on and puts you right at the nexus of everything. And instead, moving on from that, we have ice fishing. And that goes where aquaculture or whaling would have been in the previous meta. And that gives you the ability to harvest fish. So you have to actually work up to ice fishing there and to lay down outposts. You don't get to just start off with it. And that, I think, is a strong balance to keep them from snowballing too much, because overall, I feel like Polaris just got a very big win in terms of their overall viability in-game. Beyond that, we have sledding, which replaces sailing. And that is where you unlock battle sleds instead of polar warfare. And then you have polar warfare all the way down, which would replace navigation. That allows you to make your ice fortresses and to harvest starfish. So that's also pretty nifty. Although, I guess, you know, I may have been speaking a bit too early about how well Polaris is doing in the new meta. They did actually get a pretty significant buff here. The ice bank is back down to just making 2 stars for each level up instead of 3 stars for level up. So they're going to be making a few less stars per turn. So I guess I still feel like they net one out, because if I remember correctly, prior to one of the most recent balance patches, they still were at that 2 stars per level up anyways, so yeah. Although I may be incorrect about that, I'm just speaking off the top of my head here. But overall, I feel like players didn't get too hard, all the same. Last but not least, we have Cymanti, and Cymanti is the most depressing of all of these, except for Aquarian, because losing Tridentians as Aquarian is heartbreaking, and getting a hit like that, if that scale, is pretty hard. But still, Cymanti sucked at water beforehand. They were real bad at water, especially post the explosion nerf. And the only change they gave them is to put Reichi into the sailing replacement instead of all the way down in Oceanology. So, yeah, it's now in a tech called Pescatism. Which, I mean, I guess that's something, but they still have basically no naval options whatsoever, just Reichi and Feichi, and then Algae when they can get it down, while everybody else now has fully developed navies that they can use against them, and Cymanti can't even dream of having a navy. All they have are the same nerfed Reichi. They can now make them a little sooner, which doesn't really make a big difference for Cymanti. Mind you, Midju said they're going to examine Cymanti properly later on. I really hope so, because this is depressing. It just makes Cymanti continually worse. They're not the only tribe. I would argue Tridentians were a massive, massive hit for Aquarian, and so they probably got equally nerfed with this update, but because Cymanti got basically left out of this, they've just become even more subpar, and just a worse tribe, nowhere near the top of the board. They've been in the middle for a while, but I worry they're sinking to the very, very bottom at this rate. But hey, overall, these are fantastic changes, and they're not the only things going on. So the explore task got revamped too. It no longer have to uncover every single tile, because it was, to be honest, a bit of a chore before. Instead, there's now a lighthouse in all 4 corners of the map, and all you need to do is go and discover the lighthouse. Once you move a unit towards it and uncover the clouds around it, you knock off one of the 4 corners of the world, and you get all 4, you get the explore task. And the real cool thing is, it'll actually stack on a little column with the color of the tribe who discovered it in order, so you can have a little record of who's actually seen this corner in the lighthouse itself. You also don't need to get navigation or anything to get to the explorer. You just gotta run into your first lighthouse. And, you know, they're in a corner, so you know where to go looking. So that's a pretty solid bump there, too. The network task also got a bit of a rework. Used to be you had to have the roads tech to really get this going, but now it's no longer tied to the roads task. Instead, you're gonna start the network monument task the moment you connect your first city to your capital. It's not the biggest change, but it's actually really nice, especially like, say, you're playing Kiku, and you don't even want to bother with roads, because you're going all Navy all the way. Well, your port connections are enough, you'll get the monument, long as you link up 5 through that. You don't have to worry about roads. And those aren't the only changes. You see, there are also some AI updates to make them a little smarter, a little better. I've heard we should have a much more difficult, crazy bot, and I am super excited for that, because, I mean, The previous updates made the bots so much more viable, but I really look forward to getting to a point where the AI can reasonably challenge human players regularly. That would be, I think that would be a huge boon for everybody, and keep the game fresh and new for everyone. There are also some balance changes. So Lumber Huts and Rhodes have both got a change. They've gone up 1 star in price. Lumber Huts cost 3 stars to lay down, and Rhodes cost 3 stars. Now, that's to make you less likely to lay down a road on every single tile of the map, which, okay, that's fair. And Lumber Huts were, they were this weird thing where, yes, you only got one pop from them, but they only cost 2 stars, the same as fruit or wild game for hunting organization. And it made it easier to scale up a level up with that because it was just so cheap for what you got. So they've bumped it up 1 star. That'll help slow down tribes like Barter or Hudrick's early growth. And I don't think it's the worst balance at all. That's pretty solid. We did see as well parks get a little bump up. So now you have a reason to get a park in Might Mode, and that's because you get +1 star per turn in addition to the 250-point score bonus when you get one. So let's say you want to keep some pop open so you can make catapults, and you don't want to waste time on a giant, especially now that they're not for GBSs. You don't need yourself a juggernaut. Instead, you just need more bombers, and you want to leave space for a defender to do that role. Well, now you can go ahead and just pop a park, get that extra star per turn. It's just as good as a workshop, which is amazing, and it helps you scale up your economy more, which I think is a really positive change as well. And then last but not least, we see some variation in the melee units on land, which, again, I don't think is a bad change. I think this is also a good change. Helps add more variety to the combat. So it's just a minor one. They remove the fortify ability from swordsmen, making them very different from defenders, who now get to be, as they say, the definitive defensive unit. Defenders with their 3 defense value and a fortify bonus will give them a huge boost in defensive capability, especially with walls. Meanwhile, swords are never going to get a defense bonus, walls or no. So it means you're going to be using sword spam specifically for offensive capabilities, and frontline sword spam is no longer going to be a thing where you knee jerk and be like, I need to defend against a million riders running at me all at once. Well, you'll want a defender for that instead, because defenders are designed for that, whereas swordsmen are designed for warfare. If you want to still be on the offense afterwards, it's still a viable option, but they're going to take a lot more damage before you get the chance to do anything with them. I don't think that's a terrible balance change at all. Last but not least, there's some map changes. And I thought this one was pretty nice. Off the bat, we have a continents overhaul to make continents better. The terrain generator's being rewritten. And they've done their best to try and give everyone their own continent, or divide everyone evenly on a few continents, with a few other configurations on the side, to try and give everyone a more balanced start, so you don't get just basically spawn screwed and given no real chance to succeed. Everybody should have a more balanced chance here. And they've also done something really cool, which is add in rivers. They're just going to be 1-tile-wide stretches of shallow water in the middle of a continent. And it's going to look aesthetically cool. But those are also going to be specifically where you're probably going to want to lay down your bridges, which is going to make them very viable and interesting bits of strategy. Maybe you want to connect 2 lands. Maybe you want to make sure they stay disconnected. Well, these rivers are going to add a bit more variety to that aspect of the game there. And that's not the only change to maps. There's a new map type for once. We've got a new map type called Pangaea. That's right. A giant, huge, singular continent landmass surrounded by water. So you can have a naval warfare and still get sort of that dry lands experience of being able to reach your opponents by land without having to do a whole naval expedition force just to get there. It's they call it Drylands and Archipelago shoved together. I think of it as a far more refined continents experience. I think this is going to become a very, very, very popular map type very quickly. Maybe one of the most, or the most popular once it launches. We'll see. We'll see. Now, for the folks who want to get on and try out the beta, it is open for people to hop into and test out, but here's the catch. It's not on mobile. Right now, the beta is only on Steam. All you gotta do is go in and type in the code Polytopia Beta Testers. That's all one word. P-O-L-Y-T-O-P-I-A-B-E-T-A-T STESTERS, and that's all lowercase. You type that into Steam under the betas section, under private betas, click check code, and you'll be popped right on in. So you can go and check it on out there, but you'll need to have access to your copy on Steam if you want to play. Overall, though, huge, massive, fantastic updates that I'm very, very excited to see roll out. I think it's going to really reinvigorate and revitalize the game, and certainly gives us here at the podcast a whole bunch more to talk about as we begin to explore all the changes to naval warfare and the new strategies that are going to emerge from this, honestly, overall, incredibly positive update. And it's really positive, too. Just in personal timing, my birthday's coming up, and I'm quite excited to see one of my favorite games get a complete revamp in one of the things we knew needed to be revamped for years. So that's something really cool to explore personally, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have it all line up in timing so nicely. But enough about me. And I think that pretty much wraps up our talk about the update. So, thanks as always for tuning in, Polytopians. And until next time, see ya.